to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget that this show will be also available as a download. You can listen to it on our own website, www.nagb.org.bs. Go to the education drop-down menu, and there you'll find the Blank Canvas link, and we post all of the shows after they've aired. So if you just caught like the tail end of the last segment and you were wishing you'd heard more, or you just want to listen to the show again, then go to the NAGB website and you can listen to it again. I have Tyrone Ferguson in the studio with me tonight, which is always fun. And we've been talking about his practice, which is metalworking, being a smith, a blacksmith, smithying. Is that a verb? I think it is. Smithying. And we've commissioned Tyrone to make an appropriate set of gates for the front of our beautiful building and for the entry into the sculpture garden. And we've been speaking about that and sort of what that means for the institution and what we're kind of trying to do with it. Do you make more than one visit to a site? Do you feel that, like, while you're making your thing, you're like, you know, I need to go back and get a feeling for where they're going again? Or do you just make that the initial site visit and make your plan and then let the metal just do the work or talk to you?
I'm still doing that now. I'm still doing drive-bys. Still stopping to the bottom of the hill and walking up, approaching it from different
angles.
I'm seeing it. You know, I'm seeing that finish line. You know, I always believe that, you know, that when the job is ready, when the client is ready, you know, I would be ready. Mm-hmm. So those gates were probably in Genesis for a long time, for a very long time, even before the National Art Gallery was there. I can see the genesis of those gates in Barcelona, and I became impressed with Gaudi's work.
You know, amazing. Gaudi's work is incredible.
And so I saw those gates then. Yeah. So those gates, you know, are going to be made from bronze. But I'm looking back in Spain, it's iron. The kind of iron that they used, and they don't make that kind of iron anymore. And where we are in the Bahamas with all the salt there and all that kind of stuff, you want to stay away from the iron.
Right, because it's going to rust.
And the steel. So we're using what we call exotic metals. Mm-hmm. So I've probably made about five, you know, sets of gates from bronze in my lifetime. The Levy gates would be one of those.
Yeah, they're lovely. You know, so would you say the idea for these gates were born before the commission and you were waiting for the right place?
Indeed. Yes. Indeed.
Oh, I feel very privileged. That's great.
So, which means I've had a lot of practice going into these gates. As a matter of fact, I've been fortunate to have been blessed with clients who've actually given me a blank canvas. They will just do anything that you want to do, you know, without, you know, worrying about the cost of it or the aesthetics of it. So it's up to me to do something that's site specific, but also something that I feel good about in my heart producing. And that's how I feel about these gates that we're doing for the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. I'm seeing them way into the future, long after we are not here.
Well, and that's the point, really. I think that's why, I mean, you know, two things. One of the reasons was, again, you know, showing, it's one of the reasons we've, and it's again how everything fits together, you know, like a sort of network or like a tapestry, because the idea for the sculpture garden was specifically because it's so hard to show sculpture at the National Art Gallery, right? It's a tiny little, I mean, it looks like a big building from the outside, but it's a domestic scale, except the ballroom now, which we've reclaimed. But, you know, the little rooms in the front section where people lived, there, it's not so easy to show really large sculpture there. And then just in terms of moving things around the building and how you store it, you know, it's really difficult. We don't have a large storage facility. So, you know, if we would commission works by artists, where would they go? How would we care? So the sculpture garden was really a way to kind of allow for sculpture to be part of the, you know, dialogue at the National Art Gallery. But then the gates, you know, then looking at the whole position, it was like, well, we need something. We need something to go there that speaks to what we're doing inside. And that's why I feel so, it makes my heart when you said Antonio Gaudi. I was like, oh, fantastic. Because, you know, that's exactly the idea. And that the gates shouldn't be, I mean, obviously they're going to be functional. But you speak about being given a blank canvas, which of course works very nicely for the show. But I think that's the whole point, because we're commissioning you not as a gate maker, but as an artist. And so we want that artwork to be there, and to be there, as you spoke to, in perpetuity, so that when we're gone, you know, in 100 years, in 150 years, those gates are still there with that building that's been sitting there 200 years as well. And then it becomes this whole property of something really precious. So that's what I'm excited about.
I am too.
So we're looking at maybe end of June, early July, we're thinking.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I'm suddenly a light bulb. It's suddenly turning into an independence thing, isn't it? I just said.
What a lovely independence gift.
Right? Exactly.
And to the Bahamas.
To the Bahamas. Well, exactly, because it is a gift to the country.
And you know what? To the world at large, because I do expect people to be coming here saying you have to see these gates.
Yeah. I do too. And I think people will be... really, like I said, with even some of your other gates, I've sometimes pulled my car over to stop and get out and go look, because, and I think that will be something that happens, because it's also something I did a long time, and it's funny that you do it still too, and I still do it to this day. I'll sometimes just go out and I'll sit on the corner, or I'll sit at the bottom of West Street looking up West Street, and I observe how locals and visitors walk and engage with the building. And you know what that flow is. And I think these gates are going to really change a lot, because right now you come up the corner and, you know, there's a lot of walls and gates that are just blocking you and blocking. And I think that this is really going to change that in a major way.
I do believe that also.
So is it difficult for you when you spent all this time? I mean, now we've been working on this from the first lunch we had, it's probably... a year and a half ago, maybe?
About that, yes.
About that. And then we met a couple of times, and you know, then we got the materials, and now you've started the work. Is it difficult for you to let the things go once they're complete? How does that, as an artist, how's that moment for you when you have to go and load them on the van and install them?
You know, it's difficult to explain that, you know, that... You've been in this process of labor pains, and now it's like people are going to see the bird. People mm-hmm. are going to see, you know, what you've delivered,
mm-hmm.
and it all becomes kind of relative to their kind of objectivity, like what experiences they bring to it. But you want to believe in your heart that there's no one who will see your work and not appreciate it,
mm-hmm.
because somehow they will understand and connect to the labor of love and experience the energy. So the thousands and thousands of blows that goes into this process, people don't know that, but somehow I believe like people will feel it in a kind of a subliminal way. They will kind of understand that they're having an experience with something, you know, very sacred.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what it sort of comes back to, this idea of sacredness and healing and all these things I think are really important in artworks. And that's, of course, something we're trying to kind of connect to and allow people to connect to. Before the break, we were speaking about the metal workers that you discovered in West Africa and how they were sort of less important to the community in a way than they had been in the time when, you know, they worked for the king. And do you feel that happened here in terms of those? I mean, not just for artists, but also for people working simply in a way that is connected to the earth. You know, so for example, agriculture or metalworking are these things that are sort of labor practices. Do you feel they're less valued in a way than they were at a former time?
Well, you know, when that happens, I think it happens because of the lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we have probably like leaders in place who don't have the kind of education that they need to move people forward, then, you know, there's some kind of a gap.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an idea. You know, we say to children who are not very bright academically that mm-hmm. you probably need to learn, you know, one of the trades, like, you know, mm-hmm. plumbing, electrical, mm-hmm. welding, whatever have you. But what they find out when they go into these trades is that you won't advance very far if you're working, you know, architecturally, if you're working on a house where you need to read blueprints mm-hmm. and do geometry. Well,
and do quite a lot of math, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. So you're not going to get very far in, you know, if you're not able to use your head, you know. So you set people up to fail. Mm-hmm. You know, you send them to somewhere like a BDVI, and they leave BDVI and comes to me and find out that they can only be an apprentice mm-hmm. working with me and may never be much more than an assistant mm-hmm. because, you know, to produce the work on your own, you have to understand, you know, certain, you know,
definitely and yeah, and I think there is a kind of an overall sort of assumption that yeah, if you're not that bright, again, and it's the same with art too, right? I put them in the art class and I find that so extraordinary. In fact, at the school, I probably shouldn't say this because some people know where my kids go to school, but anyway, I was at a meeting one night at a school and we were talking about the further education of the children and, you know, what would happen in the coming years, and one parent put up their hand and said, so what about the mathematics? What do you have in terms of mathematics classes for the children? And they said, well, we have the really super advanced maths for the people that are going to be, you know, rocket scientists, and then we have just regular advanced maths, or, you know, for the people that, you know, want to be accountants and what have you. And then we have the math for the artists. And he was saying it sort of as a joke, but of course, you know me, Tyrone, I put up my hand and said, I'm sorry, I'm an artist and I run a budget and I'm actually very good at maths. And I know, you know, and it, but again, it was a sort of, it's a sort of assumed thing that like artists are flaky. And, you know, you speak to also certain trades too, you know, that, oh, they're not, yeah, you're not doing too well here, so let's stick you in plumbing. And I think that is really, it's really bad. You know, it's so bad for all those, it's demeaning to all those trades, right? It's really demeaning. And if you are living in a home, if you're a homeowner, if you're lucky enough to be a homeowner, but even if you're just living in a rental, you know, plumbing, electricity, good architecture, I mean, all those things are fundamental, right? And you want someone smart and someone who really knows their trade, because otherwise, you know, and I think those are the people that you really have to respect, because they do all the kind of underground work somehow that is under the surface but is so important. And I feel like art's a little bit like that too. So I think we're all kind of doing this sort of underground work in a way, where we're the foundation of society, but nobody knows we are.
But again, you know, I think again, you know, that has a lot to do with the process of our education. Mm-hmm. Because here it is, I'm working on a commission, you know, doing entry doors for a house in Lake Bikie. This house probably costs around $8 million. Mm-hmm. When people come to the house, they're not asking like, well, who built the house? Who's your contractor? And all that. They're saying to the owner, you know, this is a very nice house. Mm-hmm. Very nice. But when they see the entry doors, they're like, wow, who made these?
Yep.
And the owner has the opportunity to say, you know, they were locally made
mm-hmm.
by a Bahamian.
Mm-hmm.
And people go, wow, mm-hmm. you kidding? You know, like, can something like that be made in the Bahamas?
I know, but isn't that sad? Shouldn't the response rather be, oh, of course. Do you know what I mean? Like Swiss yes, made. Indeed. You know, you're like, oh, indeed. Swiss made means it's going to work. So that's what I always tell people. That's I have different responses to things when I travel, when I travel internationally and people see a Bahamian artist and they say, oh, wow, so-and-so is so amazing. I had no idea. And I always say, there's more where that came from. There's plenty more where that came from. Or when I'm here and we get visitors to the National Art Gallery that walk out and say, God, I had no idea. And I'm always like, well, then we need to change that. That the idea is, oh, of course, great art, great ingenuity, great engineering. Of course that's Bahamian. Obviously. You know, and I feel like that's what we have to work towards, right, is that response.
So for me, it's a teaching moment when we're mm-hmm. doing an installation.
Mm-hmm.
The local workers on the job definitely thinks that this is something that came from somewhere away, and we're doing this installation.
Really?
So they're so surprised to hear that, like, they're actually touching the work, like, you actually made this, get out of here. You could see the disbelief, like, they can't believe that this was made here.
Right up on the hill there. And do any of those people ever take the next step and say, wow, could I come see where you work? Would you show me that?
Well, you know what? I'm always meeting people who would be probably doing art at COB. Mm-hmm. Where they would say they're interested in metal work.
Mm-hmm.
But they never found me. They never called me or anything like that. And I'm like, really? You know, like, you really very interested in metal work? And then, you know, there's a school here, you know, that's, you know, I know some of our art teachers who've never visited the art gallery.
Well, that's true. But, you know, again, I think that's a two-way street. So I think, you know, very often there, I do find as well, sometimes, you know, artists are intimidated by, you don't think you're intimidating because you're just Tyrone, right? You're a nice guy and we're friends. But to a young art student, you are Tyrone Ferguson. Oh my gosh. So I think there's a sense of also, you know, same. Sometimes people are like, oh, the National Art Gallery, isn't that for certain kind of people? That's not for me. So I think a lot of people have this feeling sometimes that they're not worthy. And then also from the institutional standpoint, I think traditionally, or I feel like we need, with things like the gates, with things like the Sculpture Garden, we need to do the better job to say, hey, you're welcome in here. Come in anytime. Come see us. And so I think maybe, and I'm speaking only for myself, not for Tyrone Ferguson, that maybe that's the work that we have to do to meet in the middle.
But you know what? I think you're so right. Because I remember just recently, an artist came to meet me at a show at the Central Bank, because she heard I was going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that she lived right at the bottom of the hill from me.
Like, so and you were like, why didn't you just walk up the street?
You know? She said, I can just come to the house and knock on the door and introduce myself.
You can. It's okay, as long as you're not a stalker.
Yes.
But so I think it's a little bit, you know, we forget when you move forward in your career, you forget sometimes, you know, because again, like all the people I grew up with, that I was at college with when I was 18, and they're all really, you know, running museums in the States, doing big things. And I speak to younger artists, they're like, oh my gosh, you know so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, sure, but he's just a guy. Here's his number, call him, you know. But I think, you know, you forget as you move forward sometimes that other people might see you as unapproachable for whatever reason. But again, I think it is a lot about communication because, you know, a lot of the teachers, like you say, you know, I'm surprised too. I meet a lot of art teachers that haven't been to the National Art Gallery. But, you know, until recently, I think maybe about 2 years ago, it was paid admission, right? Now we have the free Sundays, so everybody can come for free on Sunday. But, you know, those small things like that, you know, having gates that say go away, having an admission price that make it for many people not possible or not conceivable. And I think if you then, that fancy building, if you have an air that you can only come in here if you're a certain kind of person or whatever, then, you know, you're not welcoming the people in. So we're getting many more teachers now, many more students. But even so, and then of course for people in the Family Islands, you know. So now we're taking the collection to the Family Islands.
Very nice.
Yeah, we're getting on a boat and we're unpacking it. And, you know, because how can you expect the teachers in the Family Islands to know what's at the National Art Gallery unless we take it to them, right?
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. But I think having your gates is going to be even nicer. So
I'm
looking forward to it. And I think they're going to say, hey, everyone, come on in, which is what I say every week on the show. Hey, everyone. Come to the National Art Gallery. Believe it or not, Tyrone, we're down to our last minute, so we have to say goodbye.
Wow.
I know, right? It goes always quicker than we imagine. But I want to thank you so much for coming in, for sharing your spirit.
It has been my pleasure.
Oh, it's always mine. It's always mine to get together with you. And I think it's going to be a pleasure for really everybody to walk past the National Art Gallery once your gates are installed. So I will, of course, announce on the show when we're going to be installing those. And in the meantime, we have a lot of great shows on. We just rehung the National Collection on the ground floor in a new show called An Eye for the Tropics. So that's got a lot of, you know, Jackson Burnside, Dan Burnside, Max Taylor, Antonius Roberts, they're all on show, all the classics, Eddie Minnis. So it's a beautiful show if you want to come see the classics. On the upper floor, we have a watercolor exhibition by an artist called Thierry Lamar, who does the most beautiful scenes of life in Long Island and other places. And we have the George Cox, John Cox show. So, as I said, it is free on Sunday, so everyone is welcome to come. The rest of the week, there's a small admission charge, and we're open Tuesday through Sunday. So there's every opportunity to visit the National Art Gallery, and we do hope you are going to join us. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.